Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 27th day of June 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll discuss the cash grain market with Ben Pruce at the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility. Look at the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, and along the way, we'll take a look at the ag news for the afternoon, too. And don't forget to stay with us, if you can, on our home radio station immediately following the closing market report. Commodity Week comes up. Our special guest this week, Dr. Michael Cordonnier, will talk about acreage numbers and the grain stocks report during Commodity Week. You can always find it online at willag.org. That's willag.org. on Friday afternoon by about 4 o'clock Central Time.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. July soft red winter wheat at $5.85 and a quarter was up 3. The hard red at $7.26, up 5 cents. July corn at $4.43, up a quarter. September futures at $4.42 and a quarter, 3 and a quarter higher. And December at $4.47 and a quarter, up 4 cents. March corn at $4.58, 4 higher. The May at $4.64 and three quarters, up 3.5. And July of next year at $4.71 and a quarter, 3 3/4 of a cent higher. July soybeans at $14.32, down a nickel for the day. August at $13.78, a settlement price, down 3 3/4. November beans $12.28, down 16 and a quarter. And January futures at $12.34, 16 and a quarter lower. July of next year at $12.47, down 14 3/4. July bean meal at $4.69.80, up $4.30. Bean oil at $39.98, down 53 cents. August live cattle futures at $151.35, were down $1.40. The August feeders at $214.52.5. They finished 60 cents lower for the day, and the lean hogs on the afternoon at $130.60 finished 75 cents higher for 100 pounds. You can always find us, if you'd like to, online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming not long after it airs on our radio stations. Again, the web address is willag.org. This program is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
And of course, we're listening to the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. Let's check out the outside markets at this hour. Crude oil futures trading $105.72 a barrel, down 12 cents. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $3.09 3/10. That's 8 tenths of a cent higher. Ethanol futures at $2.12 9/10, up about 7 tenths of a cent. And the spread between those two is 96 and 4 tenths of a cent wide. That's a penny and 2 tenths wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.42, 2 1/10 of a cent lower. Diesel fuel at $2.99 7/10, down a penny and 6 tenths. Gold futures on the afternoon up $3 at $1,320 even, and the U.S. dollar at 80.03. That's down 0.18 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area, as it comes from the National Weather Service, says we'll see some scattered thunderstorms and showers this afternoon. Otherwise, partly sunny on our way to 86 degrees. It's 84 outside the studios here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. 30% chance of rainfall this afternoon. Winds will gust to 15 miles an hour. Fairly steady out of the south-southeast at about 11 miles an hour. Otherwise, tonight, isolated showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will all come before 10 in the evening, Central Time. Mostly cloudy and a low of 69 degrees. Again, a south-southeast wind at 6 to 8 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, a 40% chance of rainfall in the form of showers and thunderstorms. Partly sunny, otherwise a high of 84 degrees. South winds at 7 to 11, gusting to 15, a 30% chance on Saturday night, mostly cloudy and 71 degrees, and on Sunday, a 50% chance of rainfall. More on the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's check now what the numbers look like in Chicago at the CME Group, and more importantly at this hour, what the quarterly Hogs and Pigs report showed. On the phone line with us from Atchison, Kansas, at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And let's go through the quarterly Hogs and Pigs numbers. They were released at 2 o'clock Central Time. What'd they say?
Big shocker. No expansion yet, but it's coming. All Hogs and Pigs, June 1, 95%, 1% lower than the lowest trade guess. Kept for breeding, 100%, 1% lower than the lowest trade guess. Kept for marketing, 95%, about a half percent below the lowest trade guess. Makes sense. The marketing's number would be lower since the other two were as well, Todd. But essentially, when you go through the weight breakdown, March to May farrowings at 100% is about 2% lower than the lowest trade guess out there. And yet the September to November farrowings at 104 were 1% higher than the highest trade guess. So USDA saying tight supply on all hogs and pigs June 1, no extra kept for breeding, same breeding inventory as last year at this time, but as we get to September, November, look for big expansion in the farrowings.
How do you know that they're looking for big expansion in the farrowings in that late time frame? What is the number that tells you that?
That 104 for the SEPNO farrowings. That was a full percentage point above the highest trade guess.
Right. Sorry, I didn't write that down, and I don't have them in front
of me. No problem.
Okay, so that will mean probably something, I would think, by the time we get to the grain stocks report on Monday morning, and maybe not something very good.
Well, it's hard to say because we have been feeding out to record weights, and so that has to be looked at when it comes to the actual pork production, and the exports have really come on strong in the month of May, and it looks like they're still very, very strong this month. They were up something like 80% above their four-week average on this weekly export sales, and beef was right behind it in terms of a big jump versus the four-week average. So you may not see this any more than a neutral report for the corn, depending on if we continue with some really heavy weights and the demand for pork continues to outstrip the demand for beef.
Have you done enough in terms of calculating numbers and how much more grain it takes, corn that is, to feed these out to the heavier weights and at this level of hogs that are all around, what that really means? And I know that would have to have been probably done ahead of time, and it would just have been a guess on your part.
Yeah, I have not. I think that the key number is the all hogs and pigs as of June 1 at 95% of last year. It says we have been keeping marketings very, very tight and very, very current, even though we've been adding weights. And I don't know if the market will have the trade and the analysis side of the equation will have difficulty with that or not, Todd, trying to understand that. But
Let me think about that because it just popped in my mind. So what that really means, and maybe we should go back through this again, is that we've got 95% of the numbers that are going into the marketplace today at that we did at the same time last year, but they're probably heavier than they were last year. Is that
exactly right?
Right.
Okay. And that's where your PED virus is showing up big time. So I think that's where the analysts are going to have to really look in between the sheets here.
Okay, so this makes some sense to me, I think. So if we were thinking about PED, which is supposed to take out 10% of an infected herd.
Exactly. Of the young piglet.
Of the young piglet.
Right.
And if we think, and I'm not sure that this isn't really the case, about half of the herd in the United States is infected, that would give us a 5% number. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I think, you know, on the surface it does. I'm sure there's probably some number crunching that would say it can't be that close to being right, but I think it's within the realm of possibility given a government report. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, I don't know that I've actually ever seen a number that says how much of the herd is
Tyson and some of the big pork and poultry operators, the vertical integrated people, were talking in their last quarterly updates when they were doing their conference calls, and I was listening in on that. They were talking numbers of 4, 5, 6%, you know, in numbers like that, or 4 to 8 million head or something like that. So it's within, I think, the general expectation, because we are starting to see some of the herds get it twice now. And so it would be probably at least 5% of the herd by the time we get to June 1 of this year.
Yeah, so once we get to the beginning of the cool down again, when it's supposed to start back up, that number, when you look at the 104%, holy smokes, that could mean a whole lot, because the second time around on the infection, I think it's about half the kill rate. So that could be, there could be some big numbers.
Yeah, I mean, you could essentially go from a planning 104% to where it's back to 95%, because you'd be hitting that much more of the potential numbers if this vaccine did not do what it's billed to do. So that's where a lot of the science is still way ahead of us. And I guess when you add what you and I have been talking at here the last 5 minutes, if you take this report at face value, it'd be probably pretty unwise to drop the pork price very much or drop the hog price very much at the producer level, because packers, wholesalers, retailers will probably want you to keep feeding out. So in that respect, I guess I couldn't put it any worse than a neutral report for the corn and the meal.
All right. So we have, hogs finishing up the August contract at 129.82.5, and is there more upside potential then?
I think so. I think the choice box beef was up another $1.40 today, and we know we're running $246, $247 on the choice box beef, so there's very little competition out there. I think the chick placements were only up 1% again on the last report I saw. So I would think that you would have the livestock sector looking at the hogs and saying, why don't we go up there and at least test those old highs, especially since the feeders made some new record highs this past week.
Yeah, the feeders, live cattle going in, at least in their August contract, to new contract highs too. There are lots of highs.
Yeah,
they just keep coming.
To me, it seems pretty hard to assume that the live hogs will make a high before the feeder cattle. So that's kind of generally how I'm looking at it.
What did you see in the way of the trade for corn and soybeans on the day?
You know, it was a lot like this past week. The spreading was very, very active. The July Nov bean spread was up 20 cents on a return to the strong demand, strong exports, and a jump back in the spot meal basis. July SEP wheat, however, got within 2.5 cents of an inversion again, thanks to the hard red wheat harvest not being so great, quality issues pushing up the cash bids and soft wheat. July D's corn, however, went back to carrying charge for the first time since the 1st of March. So we saw a lot of spread activity. Makes sense, given that we're going into the end of the quarter, first notice day, and obviously these two big reports.
And your look forward to the reports, what do you see on Monday morning?
You know, taking it a step back into the big picture, Todd, I'm still looking at that cycle low. I'm still seeing that for the last 5 years, July wheat made a low in early June, and the only year it did not do that was 2009, and the low was made on July 7th. 2009 would be the worst-case scenario for the corn, where we dropped about 60 cents from the June report to mid-July. And that, other than that, corn reacts fairly good after the June report once we look at the last 5 years, if the wheat bottoms first. So stochastics, oscillators, cycles, seasonals all suggest to me, along with some of these other commodity complexes like the energies, the metals, the livestock, all been big buyers here of the funds, and the investment flows have been coming in. So it would seem to me that unless the USDA really gives us a shocker and a bearish report, we should have a wheat-led cycle low coming in after the report.
Some of the outside things that you might have considered through the day, the CBO had a report on the RFS looking forward. What do you think of that one?
I don't think that made the market too happy, because they essentially said if you don't change EPA, you're going to make gas prices go up. So I do think that had a little bit of an effect on the spreads this week and today especially, because I haven't gotten through the report. I've only gotten through the summary of it, but the way I read it from just a perception of it was, if the EPA doesn't change anything, then gas prices are going up, and that may cause the Obama administration to want to rethink not going ahead and reducing it so that they can theoretically bring gas prices back down, especially in light of what's going on in Iraq. So short-term feature to this trade, I think, for sure today.
Did I read this correctly? And I've been trying to go through it some during the day, too, but it's Friday and it's always busy, and I know you are as well, that it was based mostly on the inability of the nation to provide enough cellulosic ethanol to meet the advanced fuels, and that the number of ethanol gallons would be fine. It was just that you couldn't provide the advanced number or the cellulosic ethanol into the marketplace to make it all work.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to that 10% blend going into 2017. One of the big headlines I saw was meeting the total volumes of advanced biofuels specified in ISA would require extremely large increases in the production of those fuels. And I think that's where they tried to make that correlation, that because the advanced biofuels, meaning the cellulosic, is not there yet, they're going to have to go back and produce even more of the corn-blended ethanol.
Ukraine in the news today, too. That not because there's fighting happening. I'm sure there's something going on, but they signed an agreement with the European Union today.
Yes, and that actually worsens and increases the tensions between them and Russia, and it would probably provoke Russia more, and that's something that we're going to have to watch over the weekend, because Russia has been still ramping up troops along the border, and that story is not played out yet at all, Todd. So I think there's still an issue where maybe the market's right by pulling out geopolitical risk over the last couple weeks and the soft red wheat, but I think here at this point in time, you probably wouldn't want to take too much more out until you knew any much more than you do now.
And I looked at a Grains Council item today that finally put it into my mind why meal had been going up so much and what it had to do with the DDGs that are setting in China somewhat, 90 million metric tons or something that needs to be exported out of that country. They came in as imports from the United States, I suppose, and they've got to go out someplace, right?
Yeah, and China has had a substantially big increase in meal exports as well over the last 2 months, and so you do have a new competitor on the block here in the short term because of China's recent decisions. I think that is certainly something that hurt the meal price here. I want to think that it's been worked in, and I want to think that the USDA still has to answer some questions about the demand come the grain stocks report on Monday. And here again, I think that's why the bull spread was able to make back about 20 cents, and you all of a sudden saw July meal close back above 450 by quite a bit.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk to you in a few minutes during Commodity Week.
Thank you, sir.
That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Joins us on this Friday afternoon to take a look at the marketplace. And Mike will be back. He'll be here for Commodity Week. That starts about 2:36 on our home radio station up on the website at willag.org by about 4 o'clock this afternoon. Our guest is Michael Cordonier today of Soybean and Corn Advisor. He's out of Hinsdale, Illinois. The panelists, Pete Manhart, Chip Nellinger, and Mike Zuzulo. So catch us for Commodity Week this afternoon. Again, that starts in about a few minutes here on the radio station. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In just about 15 minutes now, we'll begin our Commodity Week program. Stay with us if you can on our home radio station. If not, look for Commodity Week online at about 4 o'clock this afternoon at willag.org. That's willag.org. Mike Zuzulo will be one of our panelists, along with Pete Manhart and Chip Nellinger, our special guest today, Michael Cordonier. Now, up next, you know, the fight over EPA's proposal to vastly expand its control of U.S. waters is reaching a boil in Congress, where ag lawmakers continue to blast the plan as a massive land grab. Not since the days of EPA proposals to regulate cow flatulence, fugitive dust, and pesticide spray drift has a planned EPA rule drawn this much fire, says South Dakota Senator John Thune.
If the EPA's power grab is left unchecked, few bodies of water will be able to escape the regulatory reach of the Obama EPA. This proposed new definition could apply to countless numbers of small wetlands and creeks that are typically regulated at the state level.
Thune argues, and EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy conceded in April, the rule does not limit EPA Clean Water Act jurisdiction to just navigable waters, but to all waters that can impact navigable waters.
It also deems all tributaries to be categorically jurisdictional. And for the first time ever, ditches, Mr. President, are defined as jurisdictional tributaries. This is cause for concern.
Subjecting irrigation, roads, and stormwater ditches to regulation under the Clean Water Act, possibly requiring permits, compliance costs, and threats of fines or lawsuits. That while interfering with the timely ability of farmers to fertilize, plant, and irrigate. Kansas Senator Pat Roberts says normal fieldwork could suddenly require an EPA permit, according to one of Roberts' constituents.
It will be more difficult to farm and ranch or to make changes to the land, even if those changes would benefit the environment. For the folks back home, the issue of the EPA trying to control more water, whether or not it is actually navigable, this isn't new. We've been down a similar road before with the agency wanting to regulate all of the water in the country, even in small farm ponds. I would tell my colleagues that no self-respecting duck would ever land.
Roberts has joined in a Senate proposal to stop the EPA rule. A similar effort's been mounted in the House, though Senate Democrats have so far blocked the Senate move. Still, Roberts says Congress has stopped this type of foolishness before, and he expects they will be successful again. Let's go from Washington, D.C., all the way out to North Dakota, where the State University Extension agriculturalists there have been suggesting farmers, because they have so much corn in storage, based on the backlog of rail cars and locomotives, are dealing with some new storage problems, like having corn in the summer months. That's probably telling all on its own. But the extension professional there says have to make sure that they keep those corn bushels in really good shape. And that means watching the moisture content inside of the bin, and that they might just cover those ducts up for the fan to prevent warm, moist summer air from flowing in and causing condensation. Speaking of warm, moist summer air, let's come back to Illinois, where the soft red winter wheat crop is being harvested this week and will continue to do so through the month of July. Plant pathologist Carl Bradley from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois has some advice for producers dealing with DON or vomitoxin in their soft red winter wheat crop. He suggests they blow it out the back of the combine.
The reason we really want to blow those out and not take those to the elevator is those ones that are very infected will also likely have high levels of a mycotoxin known as deoxynivalenol or DON. Some people also refer to this mycotoxin as vomitoxin. And so if you adjust your combine to really blow out a lot of the very lightweight kernels, that hopefully will reduce the overall level of deoxynivalenol that would be in that load of grain.
However, it is really hard for any farmer to leave grain on the ground, especially when it was so beautiful on the head. Their question is always, aren't I just blowing yield out the back?
The answer is yes, you probably are. However, there was some work out of the Ohio State University a few years ago. They published a paper on it, looking at combine adjustments, and they found kind of the best adjustment to make in regards to being the most economical. Although you're losing some yield, you also are getting rid of some of those very scabby kernels that have high levels of the toxin in it. And so if you end up blowing more of those out, you actually have less of a discount at the elevator, so it actually works out.
The Ohio State University recommendation for the fan speed adjustments can be found in an article Carl Bradley posted to the University of Illinois Bulletin website. The recommended adjustments are for fan speed between 1,375 and 1,475 RPMs and shutter opening at 90 millimeters or 3.5 inches. Search Google for the Bulletin and University of Illinois to find the article. Usually at this time, we would talk with a cash grain specialist. Ben Pruce at the Anderson normally joins us on a Friday afternoon. He's in Everly, Iowa. Not available for us. No worries. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Orange Blossom Day. The orange originated in Southeast Asia. The orange blossom, which is the state flower in Florida, is associated with good fortune, and at one point in U.S. history was popular in bridal bouquets and head wreaths for weddings. The petals of orange blossoms can be made into a version of rose water that's popular in Middle Eastern cuisine. On this day in agricultural history in 1829, British scientist James Smithson died. He left an endowment to the U.S. to fund an establishment for the increasing and sharing of knowledge. In 1846, President James K. Polk signed off on an act of Congress to establish the Smithsonian Institute. In 1959, the St. Lawrence Seaway connecting the Great Lakes with the Atlantic was opened. And in 1960, chlorophyll was first synthesized by Robert Burns Woodward at the Converse Memorial Laboratory of Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The molecule consisted of 72 hydrogen atoms, 55 carbon atoms, and thrown in for good measure, 5 atoms of oxygen and 1 atom of magnesium. Woodward received the Nobel Peace Prize in Chemistry for his work in 1965. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming comes to you from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Up next, Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
The statewide average temperature for June so far is 72.4 degrees. That's 0.8 degrees above average. The statewide average rainfall is 6.1 inches. Which is 1.9 inches above the long-term average of 4.2 inches. Amounts of 5 to 10 inches were common across the state. Both Dixon and Galena have reported just over 10 inches of rain so far. According to the USGS, rivers and streams in Illinois are in better shape than a month or two ago. Most gauges are near to above normal. There is minor flooding on the Illinois River and minor to moderate flooding on the Mississippi River between Dubuque down to St. Louis. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend and next week shows a continuation of the warm, humid, and rainy conditions. Highs on Saturday through Tuesday will be in the 80s. On Wednesday and Thursday, highs will be in the 70s in the northern Illinois and in the 80s in central and southern Illinois. Nighttime lows will be in the upper 60s and low 70s this week. There is a chance of rain on Saturday through Tuesday with potential rainfall totals of 1 to 3 inches. While the 4th of July is still several days away, next Friday looks to be cool and dry in the morning with heat and humidity moving in by the afternoon with a chance of rain, especially in western and northern Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute for his update of the agricultural weather forecast. Here the way the numbers settled in Chicago at the CME Group and the weekly changes. July corn this week had a high of $4.57¾, the low over the week at $4.39½. A settlement price at $4.43 on Friday afternoon was down 10¼ cents from the previous Friday's close. December corn at $4.47¼, the new crop down 4¾ cents for the week. In the soybean pit, July beans at $14.40¾ cents for the high, the low at $14.04½. Settlement price, again, up 16¼ cents at $14.32 for the July soybeans. No crop November, $12.28, finished 3½ cents lower. July soybean meal at $469.80, up $10.60 on the week. July bean oil at $39.98, finished 15 cents lower. July soft red winter wheat at $5.85¼, unchanged on the week, and the weekly change for the hard bread was up 5¼ cents in the lead option July at $7.26. Live cattle from the CME group finished at 151.12½, up $4.80 from the previous Friday. August feeder cattle at 214.32½, up $7.45, and lean hogs at $129.82½. Settled 67½ cents higher than the previous week, at all from the CME Group in Chicago.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is Illinois Public Media.